We kick off hour number two of the program. This segment, as we get set to talk some Tennessee recruiting, is brought to you by Volunteer State Insurance. David Britt and his team at Volunteer State Insurance Brokers. Online, volunteerstateinsurance.com. What more could you want from your insurance agent? Works for you, not the insurance company. UT alum, Tennessee fan, one of 37 here, loyal listeners of Fan Run Radio. And won't even charge you brokerage fees. Just mention Fan Run Radio. Get a quote. It's absolutely free. See what you get. David Britt at VolunteerStateInsurance.com. If you want to email, B-R-I-T-T, David Britt at VolunteerStateInsurance.com, or call 865-224-3243. That's 865-224-3243. Or you can chat right through the website at VolunteerStateInsurance.com. If you're coming off your parents' insurance, David Britt's got a plan for you. If you're paying, if you think, well, my employee has the insurance, it just seems way too expensive for what we get, shop it around. There's other options out there. My wife and I just switched over to Volunteer State Insurance, and every single medical professional that we were using was in-network for the plan that David recommended, and he can do the same for you. VolunteerStateInsurance.com for all the information. Contact David Britt. Get you a quote. Just see. Just check. See if it's a better plan than what you're on right now. Health insurance. He does life insurance as well at VolunteerStateInsurance.com. So now we got Tennessee fans chirping. Like, I liked it when it was Georgia fans complaining. I liked it when it was Alabama fans. I liked it when, you know, Mike Griffith was getting his panties in a wad. But
I want you to talk about him later.
Mm.
But now we got Tennessee fans thinking, wait. I don't want good news. Like, come on.
Yeah. I just don't understand it.
I just
don't want to be happy.
I'm always reminded when I look at recruiting rankings and classes, especially as they get full. And Tennessee right now is at 22 commits. It's the most of maybe any school at all.
I think it is.
So we have more commitments than any other school. I guess for me, it depends on what argument you're trying to make. And I think we're making a very sound argument. If there are Tennessee fans out there saying, we're number two in the country. We're number two. Can you believe it? Going to be number two. This is awesome. We're going to finish recruiting as the second best team in the, like, yeah, that's probably wrong. Like, or that's at least like pointing at the scoreboard after you score a touchdown in your opening drive in a big game. Like, it's just too early to do any of that, first of all. And second of all, yeah, if you look at the average numbers, right now, Tennessee is not, if this was like a presidential election and you were trying to predict how the polls were going to close, you would not predict Tennessee at two. The most likely outcome is not for Tennessee to finish at two.
Yeah, it's one.
What we've said, which I think is a sound argument, is that Tennessee's hot. Players are rallying to Tennessee. Players are talking about Tennessee. Even big name five stars that haven't committed anywhere are talking about Tennessee, which I don't care what argument you want to make about last year, the year before, and class rank. That's different. There's something different going on. That's the argument we've made. It's a sound one. It holds up. No one can challenge that. This year has been different in recruiting than the previous two. Note, if you want to just look straight at numbers and where we are right now, then and how the class is going to finish, that's a whole different can of worms. It's not bad news, though, to be the hottest thing going in college football recruiting. That's never a bad thing. I will take it any day of the week. So if you're a Tennessee fan hating on that, yeah, I just don't care. That's like going up 14-0 in the Swamp and going, I don't want to be up two touchdowns because we might lose and then it'll hurt more.
Mm.
Okay,
well said.
Would you rather be down two touchdowns? What the crap, man? Like, if you're going to win, you have to be winning at some point. What were they saying?
I mean, it's essentially what other fan bases are saying, but they're doing that, the other fan bases, I mean, they're doing that to discredit the work that's been done.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing that to convince themselves that Tennessee's not getting better because they're getting the exact same players they've gotten the last 2 years. Weren't we not inside the top 10 or right inside the top 10 the last 2 years? Not to mention, you've been adding some grad transfers and so on and so forth. So I think the Pruitt's – is this his fourth class he's putting together now?
Yes.
Yes, okay. The second class finished like 14th or 15th, but then as guys got qualified and you added grad transfers and other places didn't get them in, I think they finished 7th. I'll take top 7 classes, man. Like, I'll take that. I'll, like, sign me up right now. Top 10 classes are really, really good. And, I mean, it comes back to, I think a lot of this is because, oh, Butch Jones had all these great classes that filled early, and look what happened. This is a different staff, man. This is a different bunch of developers, evaluators. Like, if there's one thing we know that these guys have seen, and Jeremy Pruitt talked about this in a recent interview. It may have been on Feinbaum or something like that, but he basically just said, my coaching staff knows what elite looks like.
Mm-hmm.
We've done it. We've been there. We've got national champions. We've developed all Americans. The way I read that was, hey, I may not be Steve Spurrier as a head coach, but I know what the talent's supposed to look like. That gives me more hope than anything, really. You know, when we're taking commits from 3 stars under Butch Jones, there were a lot of times, because you didn't hear about him, the offer list was kind of meh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, it's different. I mean, the tight end, Miles Campbell, oh, another 3-star. But look at the offer list. It's like Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma, Alabama. You know, it's the same schools that you see in the playoff every year that you're beating for these 3 stars. Oh, well, they're only 3 stars. Again, the evaluation period this year has been very different for rivals, for coaches. Like, I'm sorry, I'm going to trust Jeremy Pruitt watching film with his coaching staff, deciding whether or not they want a guy over, Woody Womack at Rivals, who can only watch a little bit of junior year film or huddle, whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like all the other coaching staffs around the country are trying to recruit. They're trying to get commitments. Tennessee's got 22, more than anyone else. That tells me that Tennessee has been better at this pandemic recruiting. You have convinced more student athletes to choose Tennessee than any other school has done for themselves. That's a big deal. It's a really big deal. And if you want to say the overall average is about the same, okay, well, you got 2 5-stars in the class, both defensive guys. Number one player in the state of Florida, number one player in the state of Alabama. You're in on the number one player in the state of Georgia. You're in on a ton of other guys who are going to be, you know, 4 and 5-star players, difference makers. And if you want to say we're almost full, I guess if you want to say we almost have 25 and that's the max number, but I don't think that that's really full.
Mm.
I mean, it's like ice in a cup. Like, all ice cubes are not the same size. So, yeah, if you've got 25 small ice cubes in a glass and then you go and get bigger ice cubes, but you're like, you can still put better in this class. Mm-hmm. You're not full. Once you get to 25 commitments, it's not like they have to stop recruiting better players. And I would much rather have, hey, we really like this class. We think this is a class we can win with. We're going to keep recruiting these guys. But now we can go focus our efforts, because if we miss on this linebacker, hey, we've already got one. Now, I understand a lot of people don't like the whole processing thing, and maybe that's the uncomfortable thing that people don't want to talk about, but that's just reality.
Screw that, man. I mean, if
as no, long I, as I'm just saying, I think there, people don't want to be like, oh, well, we got to kick kids out, and I don't even like that, and blah, but college and blah.
The way these kids flip once they're committed, like, it's just mm-hmm. a thing now. Like, committed doesn't mean committed anymore, and is if especially if you're process the earlier you process them, the better it is for the kid.
Agree.
So, I mean, I would rather, as a kid, have committed to Tennessee early and then realize that, like, well, if I go there, I'm not going to get to play, and then have the coach say, hey, if you come here, you're not going to get to play, but we want to let you know now, like, so you can go ahead and look around and look at other schools. And honestly, if I'm going to go to a team that's not as good as Tennessee, it still looks better that Tennessee took my commitment earlier to get me into, you know, whoever. I don't know. What's a good like, NC State? You know what I'm saying? Like, if I call a coach at maybe a school that I was considering that was still one of my favorites but it's not on the SEC playing level and say, hey, I picked Tennessee because, you know, they had offered me and whatever, but I'm open now. Like, you know, do you want to talk to me? I feel like the fact that you were committed to Tennessee, if I'm recruiting to somewhere that's not on that level, be like, oh, yeah, let's – Jeremy Pruitt took your commitment, but now they're just loaded up. Yeah, yeah, let's talk.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It stinks to be one of those kids and think, wow, I'm good enough to play at Tennessee. And then maybe you get told, you are, but this guy's just better. But that's just life, man. Like, sometimes people are just better at you than stuff, and you got to deal with it. And again, I keep going back to this. We put so much on these coaches as far as keeping their job. And rightfully so. When you make that much money, there should be pressure. There should be expectations. For me, one of those expectations is, you better every year sign the absolute best class you can. And if that means you've got to hurt some feelings along the way, that's your job. Now, mm-hmm. There's a way to do it tactfully and classy, unlike Butch Jones, who got reamed by some coaches in, I think it was South Carolina, some running back, because he did it the wrong way. There's a way to do it where they don't hate you at the end, where you don't upset families and high schools and other coaches. But it is your job, if you are the head coach at the University of Tennessee, to bring in the best class every year you possibly can. That's your job. And there may be a five-star guy that Jeremy Pruitt doesn't like as much as this three-star guy. And if he wants to keep the three-star, that's on him. But if he's better, then he's better, and you got to make the move. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But I like being in the position of that's what we're worried about now than, oh, gosh, are we going to be able to get any good recruits at all? I mean, what are we at now over the last 3-4 weeks? 12 commitments? 13? And if you took those 13 and ran the average, it's up there. David did that the other day. It's over 90. I'll take that.
We'll come back with more. It's hour two. I do wonder if this is a slight change in strategy for Jeremy Pruitt, and maybe it has to do with some of the new coaches on the staff the last couple years, or if maybe they've adjusted a little bit. I guess Jay Graham would have been the newest one who's a good recruiter who might have said, might have been a part of that. I'm just kind of throwing out a theory that may have no water at all. I want to get your thoughts on it next. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville. Talking about Tennessee recruiting. They're hot, 22 commitments. And it's got people hating on them. Vol Nation Recruiting says you have to treat recruiting like it's interviewing candidates for one of your job openings. You just got to go with the best candidate. That's life. It's true. Welcome to the real world, recruits. And then Josh from earlier said, some UT fans have just been conditioned by trauma. I mean, I get that, but I don't... We look back at some of those Butch Jones recruiting classes. I don't think it was the recruiting class's fault. Like, that's not... I mean, he did take a few guys that people are kind of like, I think he's overrated, or he got hurt. I'm not sure he should still be a four-star or whatever. But kind of globally, looking at entire classes, like, the quality of players you brought in was not the problem. It was you didn't know how to handle them when they got you. I mean, a lot of those guys are in the NFL now. A lot of those guys are better in the NFL. Or a lot of those guys we knew were good here, but they just didn't perform in the big moments because of the chaos that Butch Jones and his staff created. So I want to get to this question. Do you think – I feel like that – you mentioned that first class. It was like 12 to 15 or whatever. And Pruitt said on that day
– oh, was it that high?
Oh, I don't know. I
thought it was lower.
Whatever you said. He said on that day, next year we'll be at the top. Well, the next year came, and I felt like we were near signing day.
Yeah, they were 21 and 18.
Okay, 21. He said, next year we'll be at the top. I feel like as we approached signing day, that second class, we were in with a lot of high-level guys. And then when we would miss on them, on some of them, all of a sudden, we're dropping down to some guy, some three-star guy no one's ever heard of. That was like the backup plan. Mm-hmm. But it really was more like a backup to the backup to the backup plan. It's like we went from plan A to plan D. And so when that class comes in, the guys you got. They were good. But the spots where you wanted a player at this position for this knee, whatever, sometimes you're, way down. And sometimes you went to plan D early, like with the Jordan Young kid or whatever, and still didn't get him because they blew up and went somewhere else.
I think that was we found him late, got him, and then, Florida State came calling.
So I do wonder if they've went, maybe with some of these guys that are in between plan A and plan D, some of these plan B guys that we really like, let's change our pitch to them and say, hey, we're good now. This roster that we're bringing back this year in 2020 is going to be competitive in the SEC. We showed last year that we're better, that we can beat all of the middle tier of the league. We're kind of in that gap right now. We're kind of in that chasm between the teams that compete for the SEC championship and the teams that don't. We're better than the ones that don't, but we haven't shown yet they're on the level of the ones that do. But we know that we got a roster coming back that can make that jump. And what did was it Jay Graham that tweeted? First in, first to eat, or whatever?
First come, first serve, yeah. No reservations.
Yeah. So I do wonder if that was him, those are those guys saying, okay, we're going to put a big list of guys down. These are guys we'll take commitments from right now. Anybody that says yes, you're in the boat. Let's go. And whatever they're doing is working. Do you think they've tweaked it a little bit? Or do you think it's just straight just having extra years to start relationships, and now I feel like they're working kids on the full cycle? They're getting in touch with them when they want to start with them.
Yeah, I really don't think it's a new approach. I think now you've just been in place and you have relationships with guys. Your staff does, at least a lot of your staff, Jeremy Pruitt does as a head coach. There's data now on Jeremy Pruitt as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Some good, some bad. But the end of the season last year, I think, had a really big deal. And then I think, maybe it's a different approach because you've got three national recruiters of the year on your staff.
Yeah.
So maybe the individual approach isn't different, but collectively you're just better at it.
Yeah, that's true too.
You've just got more ammunition as far as better recruiters, and I think it's making a big difference. And I think it had to be different this year, right? This year had to be different than years past, and I think they adapted to the changes better than anybody else, probably because they have such great communicators and recruiters that they...
Communicruiters. I like it.
Yeah, did that on purpose. I just think that they were, they probably brainstormed a little bit and said, here's what I think would work, mm-hmm. and they kind of put the plan together, and I think it is paying off. Because I get it. We got 22, a bunch of three-star, but you're still in with so many more players. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be able to recruit guys who are currently committed. Now, you're going to have to fight that off, too. But that's one of the things about a lot of the players committed to Tennessee. I don't know if you saw it yesterday. Some Nebraska fan sent out a picture of Terrence Lewis's bio. Said, can't help but notice that Terrence Lewis took out all the Tennessee stuff from his bio. Maybe he's thinking about Nebraska. Go Big Red. And Terrence Lewis said, LOL. Nah, man. GBO. Just wanted people to know who I was as a person. Basically nah, man, I'm going to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Kamar Wilcox, nah, I'm going to Tennessee. I'm recruiting for Tennessee. They're all recruiting for Tennessee. If they have a spot, I think they're going to come to Tennessee. And a lot of those guys, they're going to have a spot.
Yeah.
So It feels a little different. That's all. It feels different than the Butch Jones years where it's, you know, a couple of in-state or legacy four stars and then 23 stars and you hope you can cull up. This feels a little different. Especially, again, because of the way that they evaluate players and how weird that, like, don't get me wrong, if you're a five-star player right now, obviously you're really good. There's enough that the people evaluating and making the rankings, they know you're good. I don't know that they've been able to evaluate as many as deep as they do in normal years. So when I see us take a three-star commit after we've gotten so many four-stars in a row, that makes me think, okay, they see something in this guy that maybe people are missing. I mean, I would trust probably most coaching staffs over, and I don't mean this offensively, but over the talent evaluators at Rivals 24/7 and ESPN. Like, I would trust a majority of coaching staffs to say, that guy can help us. I don't care about the star ranking versus, well, we think this guy is a high three-star, and here's why. I just, you know. I don't want to sound like a trust the staff at all cost guy that, you know, they'll cheer for them because they're our coach and blah. Yeah, I just, with this group, it just seems a little bit different. I mean, just looking at the list last year, now obviously these are the high-rated guys, but like Darnell Wright, start. Wanya Morris, start. Hank T, start. Kaveris Crouch, played a lot. Ramel Keaton, played a lot. Jalen McCullough, may have even started a game, but he definitely played a lot. Eric Gray, I'd say he had a pretty good year, right? Mm-hmm. Tyus Fields, I think he redshirted. Of course, the offensive linemen, they're going to redshirt. Roman Harrison, played a lot. Savion Williams, played a lot. Brian Maurer, played a lot. Warren Burrell, started the season, three-star. Daryl Middleton, D-tackle, started the season, pretty good player, played a lot. Kenny Solomon, three-star corner, played a lot. And then, obviously, they went out and got Aubrey Solomon on the transfer. D'Angelo Gibbs probably would have played a lot if he had gotten cleared by the NCAA. So, of the guys we've seen from last year's class, not a lot of busts. Not a lot of busts. I think that's a really good sign. I mean, even in his first class, Alante Taylor. Well, he starts. Greg Emerson played a lot. He was coming off an injury, so it was probably going to take him a little bit of time to kind of get back in the swing of things. Got Bryce Thompson. Bryce Thompson's probably going to go pro to the NFL this year. Dominic Wood Anderson, you got him. He started for 2 years at tight end for you. Jordan Allen played a lot. Emmett Gooden would have been your starter at defensive tackle if he doesn't get hurt. Jerome Carvin started, four-star offensive lineman. Jeremy Banks, three-star running back, played a lot. Would have played more if he didn't get in trouble. Zamir Johnson played a lot. JT Shrout won you a ball game. I think all these other guys redshirted, if I'm not mistaken. No, Karat Garland, three-star, strong side defensive end, played a lot. It seems like they're doing a pretty good job. Like, if you don't redshirt, you're playing. Now, granted, when he got here, the roster needed help, so you need more of these guys to step in and play early, but it'll be interesting to see now some of the guys that redshirted in those two classes, how much have they developed? Are they a lot better now? But so far, the only bust flag that we're waving is the J.J. Peterson one. And that always felt like a very weird situation anyway, for a variety of reasons. But, again, if you're getting that many three-star and low-level four-star guys that are impacting your team, like that's a selling point in recruiting too. Like, he's obviously not afraid to play freshman. What do high school seniors want to do for the most part? Well, would you say they want to
play football?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As freshmen?
Play football.
Probably, yeah.
Ah.
Just seems like a pretty big sell.
Yeah.
And then again, you got to win some. And I think last year late, they did just enough of that to say, hey, it's going to work now. Right. Just. I mean, that's what they all do. You win a little bit with what you get. You win a little bit more. And then you say, if we have guys like, it's what Georgia did, it's what Kirby Smart did, you will be the difference maker.
Right.
You're the difference in us beating Alabama and losing to Alabama. You're the difference in giving up 40 to Georgia or giving up 20 and winning. And that's why the defensive class this year especially is so good. Then you get, you know, Daryl Taylor drafted. That helps. I can't wait to get back to where there's like 10, 12 Vols getting drafted.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always fun.
That'll feel great.
I'm a big fan of that.
Big fan. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville, Wednesday edition, 3 and out. We talked about The Last Dance the last couple episodes yesterday, and now the fallout has started. Now the media members are starting to go to other people that were in it, but maybe not main players, and say, hey, what'd you think of The Last Dance now that's all out? And Horace Grant, not happy. Not happy at all. He says that Michael Jordan lied in The Last Dance and calls him a snitch. Horace Grant went on a radio interview with ESPN 1000 in Chicago yesterday and said, quote, The Last Dance is, quote, a downright, outright, completely lie. Well, he said it's a lie that he leaked much of the information in Sam Smith's famous The Jordan Rules book, as Jordan alleged during the documentary. Lie, lie, lie. If MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle this like men, Grant said during the interview.
Is that challenging him to a fight?
Well, he said, let's talk about it.
Oh.
Or we can settle it another way.
Dominoes.
But yet, and still, he goes out and puts this lie out there. I was the source behind the book. Sam and I have always been great friends. We're still great friends, but the sanctity of that locker room, I would never put anything personal out there. The mere fact that Sam Smith was an investigative reporter, that he had to have two sources too, to write a book, I guess. Why would MJ just point me out? It's only a grudge, man. I'm telling you, it was only a grudge. And I think he proved that during this so-called documentary. When if you say something about him, he's going to cut you off. He's going to try to destroy your character. I mean, I stand with Horace on that take.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan kind of admitted that.
Yeah.
You come at me, I will just do everything I can to end you, even if... We were talking about the Tennessee fan base being petty because that other guy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordan is the pettiest person maybe ever.
What's weird is he was as a player, and you think maybe after you play, like, okay, there's really no need for me to be petty anymore. Nope, still holds grudges. Mm-hmm. Years later.
It's what he uses
grudges that he created out of thin air.
Right.
He still is like, oh yeah, he said this to me. I might have made it up, but he said it. It's like, oh man.
Grant, who helped Jordan and the Bulls win 3 NBA championships from 91 to 93, noted that some of Jordan's closest relationships have deteriorated over the years because of critical comments made about him. Charles Barkley, they've been friends for over 20, 30 years, Grant said, and he said something about Michael's management with the Charlotte Bobcats or the Charlotte Hornets, and then they haven't spoken since. And my point is, he said that I was the snitch, but yet, and still, after 35 years, he brings up his rookie year going into one of his teammates' rooms and seeing coke and weed and women. My point is, why the hell did he want to bring that up? What's that got to do with anything? I mean, if you want to call...
He didn't say who it was. He just said it was in there. You know, people were... Yeah.
If you want to call somebody a snitch, that's a damn snitch right there.
He didn't snitch on anyone in specific. He just said he went in there. Did he?
There's a name. Hang on, I'll find it.
This feels like the Kentucky thing. Like, we don't think that NBA players drink, do drugs, and have women. We just don't. That's not a thing that happened. Like, that's a big surprise to anybody.
I thought that was what being an NBA player is all about.
Those are the three.
Those are the bonuses. Staples, yeah. You don't get health insurance or anything. You get women and drugs.
I mean, there was the correlation, Davey, between James Harden and the quality of the strip club at the city they play, right?
That's very true, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he goes to strip clubs. Oh, my God. Duh. You've got more money than you know what to do with, free time on the road, away from friends, family, rules. Yeah, of course they're going to do these things. Horace, come on, man. Now, leaking team-sensitive material, and I'm not saying Horace did it, leaking something to a newspaper or an investigator, that feels a little different. That feels like a betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
But saying, if any NBA player came out right now and said, there are people on this team who sleep with random women and occasionally take drugs. Well, is that a headline? Are we kidding?
Well, I think Horace is talking about the hypocrisy. He doesn't really care that Jordan said that. He thinks it's funny that Jordan would call someone else a snitch when he essentially snitched himself. Like, he gave up the locker room, what goes on behind the curtain, and so now he's criticizing other people for doing the same thing. It's like, hey, it's a double standard.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an
but
example.
But again, he's saying is common knowledge. What Horace or whoever told the guy is not.
Well, maybe, but I think the theme around the cocaine circus with Chicago is that they were known for it. They were worse than everyone else, and that's why they sucked at basketball.
Right.
Like, they crossed the line with the women and the cocaine.
Has MJ ever admitted to being wrong?
No.
I don't know.
He didn't in that. Horace went on to say...
No, he did say he felt bad for punching Steve Kerr.
Yeah, because it was the smallest man on the
court.
Yeah,
he said he shouldn't have done that.
He said, I felt that big. I think that's him saying I was wrong to punch Steve Kerr in the eye.
I would say it was entertaining. This is Horace talking about just the documentary in general. I would say it was entertaining, but we know who was there as teammates, that about 90% of it, I don't know if I can say it on the air, but BS in terms of the realness of it. It wasn't real because a lot of the things Jordan said to some of his teammates, that his teammates went back at him, but all of that was kind of edited out of the documentary, if you want to call it a documentary. Then it says, one of the storylines throughout the documentary centered on Jordan's bullying of his teammates. Grant said Jordan's behavior sometimes crossed the line. Quote, he felt that he could dominate me, but that was sadly mistaken because whenever he went at me, I went right back at him. But in terms of Will Perdue, Steve Kerr, and the young man Scott Burrell, that was heartbreaking to watch. To see a guy, a leader, to go at those guys like that, I understand in terms of practicing you have to push and shove here and there, but outright punching and things of that nature and calling them the B's and the H's, that wasn't called for.
Wasn't Horace Grant beat by Charles Oakley his rookie season and like the season right after that too? Like, isn't he complaining about what MJ was doing, but when Oakley was doing the exact same thing and he didn't say much about it at all?
Maybe, but didn't they get rid of Oakley because Grant was so good?
Maybe.
Anybody who knows me as a rookie, if anybody comes up and tries to snatch my food away, I'm going to do my best to beat their ass, Grant said. And believe me, back then, I could have took MJ in a heartbeat. Yes, it's true that he told the flight attendant, well, don't give him anything because he played like crap, and I went right back at him. I said some choice words that I won't repeat here, but I said some choice words and stood up. If you want it, you come and get it. And of course, he didn't move. He was just barking. But that was the story. But anybody who knows me, where I come from, and what I stand for, come on, man. There's nobody on earth would ever come and try to take food off my plate and not get their rear ends beaten. I'd forgotten that even story. So,
what is his complaint then? Like, the documentary about MJ made MJ look good? That's where we're at with Horace Grant?
I think he's saying that Jordan made it look like that everybody he pushed kind of bowed down to Jordan, didn't push back, and...
Because he said it was when you fought back and pushed back, that's when you gained entry to the club. He liked Horace.
I'm not saying I agree with what he's saying. I'm just trying to explain to you what I think he's thinking.
I think Horace feels like the documentary made him look like an idiot, and I didn't think that. I think this is kind of making him look like an idiot.
Yeah, I think if he would have been this aggressive with his take during the documentary, if like that was the interview they would have used, but during the documentary he just kind of was like, no, I didn't say anything. People just assumed because I had a good relationship with Sam Smith. And
maybe he did and they edited it out, which is part of what he's saying here, is they edited a lot of stuff out.
That's true.
But Horace, like, what? Come on, man. Seems like a non-issue.
He did have one of my favorite parts of the documentary where they started talking about how he gave kids with glasses more respect for wearing goggles because a bunch of kids were getting bullied because they were wearing goggles. And then
the
they
rec
saw
specs. He did make them cool. Mm-hmm. Probably the only player to ever wear them and actually have them look cool. It was always weird, though.
Did Kareem wear them?
Yeah, but they didn't look cool.
That's
on true. Kareem.
That's fair.
Just because he was his face shape and they were much bigger and thicker than everyone else's back then. Oof, Rex back then. Remember when Admiral tried to do that for like a 5-minute window? Had to chuck him on the sideline? Those are good times.
Apparently, Horace Grant didn't like how Jordan made Scottie Pippen look either. Said he portrayed Scottie Pippen so badly. I don't know.
I feel like everybody's remembering the one little thing they didn't like about what was said about them or their friend and not all the good stuff that Jordan was saying about Pippen and Rodman and everybody. Well, Rodman didn't seem to care. It feels like Horace is like, this documentary should have been about me and it wasn't, and I didn't like it, and here's why. Like, come on, man.
We'll come back. Final segment, hour number two, right here on Fan Run Radio. Final segment, hour two. I think if people have problems with Michael Jordan in this documentary, like, they were not informed about who Michael Jordan was before it, you know? Like, he never...
I feel like Horace did.
He should have known. But it's kind of like we talked about with Peyton Manning. Like, he never went out of his way to be like, I'm Mr. Perfect. I mean, there's like Tim Tebow that kind of like says, this is what I stand for. This is me. If you find me not being this person, like, that's me being a hypocrite. Like, go ahead. Go for it. Try and find it. And as far as I know, no one ever has. Peyton Manning comes off kind of like that for a lot of people, I think. But he never – that was never his platform. Mm-hmm. And Michael Jordan was the same way. That's why that was the whole Republicans buy sneakers, too. Like, Jordan's just like, no, I'm about winning. And like you said, he mentioned – he said he admitted he crossed the line when he punched Steve Kerr. So, like, I think it's funny when people expect their sports heroes to be perfect people. Like, they hold their sports hero up to some moral standard.
Was it Charles Barkley who said, I'm not a role model? I never signed up to be a role model?
Maybe.
Like, I'm an athlete. If you like the way I play the game, be a fan, but if you don't like that I drink or gamble or whatever, like, that's not part of my life. That's really for you.
I mean, I think that's a problem in humanity. Like, you really should never worship a person, right? And and worship sounds like a funny, harsh word, but like, that's what people do sometimes. I mean, that's the right word when people are like, I want to be like this person. And you can hear the awe in their voice. Like, that's a form of worship. I mean, we literally, and I'm not even joking, see that from, like, the Vol for Lifer types. Butch Jones is the head coach at Tennessee. I mean, when he walks in the room, if they're in a restaurant and Butch Jones walked in, it was, I mean, it doesn't matter. You know, any Tennessee coach, they're going to be like, wow, there's the coach. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a form of worship, right? Like, and really, I don't know. Just a personal life principle for me. I'm not worshiping any humans. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it's a good idea.
That doesn't. You're they're just gonna let you down, right? Like, that's. So you can be impressed. You can be in awe. You can think very highly of an athlete's certain platform, stick, certain part of their character.
Skills,
obviously, yeah. But let's not act like Peyton Manning's got to be perfect, or Michael Jordan's got to be perfect, or Tim Tebow's got to be perfect. Like that's they're people.
Isn't the old saying "never meet your heroes"? Mm-hmm. And I think this documentary really let people meet a little bit more about Michael Jordan. Obviously, he had Final Cut, so it wasn't the whole story of Michael Jordan. And that's what Horace Grant was saying, but I mean, I don't think many people like me, I didn't know anything about Michael Jordan other than number 23, GOAT, statistical analysis, but I didn't know any backstory. So meeting Michael Jordan, like, I didn't get anything sour from it, but I guess people, when you kind of go beyond just that persona that was portrayed, it's a little tougher to get down and dirty.
Never meet your heroes. There you go.
You've heard that, right?
No.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've ever heard that.
Yeah. Says there's, like, the whole theory behind it is, like, there's no way they'll ever be what you think they are.
Yeah. Well, have you ever just had, not necessarily a sports hero, but there's just somebody that you're kind of like, man, they're really successful, or they're really good. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they don't necessarily let you down, but you're still impressed by how successful they are, but there's parts of their character you're like, man, that guy's really not very good at this one mm-hmm. little thing of a here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's really successful because he's really good at this, but man, dude can't tie his you know what I mean? Like, was it Peyton that couldn't match his clothing? Like, his mom had the Polaroid box? I think it was. When he came to college.
Or his wife, yeah. Take pictures of suits, shirts, and ties that go together.
Couldn't dress himself.
Yeah. I mean, the guy can't dress himself. That doesn't make me think less of Peyton Manning as a football player or as a person at that point. I mean, there's crap I don't like to do and don't or aren't good at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like in the social media age, it's worse because you can kind of put out the persona so much easier and quicker and faster, and you can filter it, like,
yeah,
literally and figuratively. You can kind of just like, this is who I am, the perfect da 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 da. And one of the was it Kramer, maybe Andrea Kramer, that said, like, that's the brilliance of Michael Jordan's, like, how big he was back then. He couldn't just tweet out his whole life.
Right.
But people still got the information, still, you know.
Well, and he knew he had to be on once he left the hotel room. Like, once there were
crazy,
people. Yeah,
right?
I mean, he knew. You know, he wanted to be dressed nice. And, I mean, you could tell the way he spoke to his team and the way he spoke to the media. It was like it was two different people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, he had his camera personality, and then he had his player personality. And obviously now I think we all know that the player personality is much closer to the real Michael Jordan than the stand in front of the camera and be perfectly content with everything and so on and so forth. I like the documentary. Horace Grant's been kind of a baby. And some others. It's like I mean,
anytime the main character gets to edit, like, there's going to be mm-hmm. stuff edited out.
Sure.
It just is. I mean, I thought, I don't know, the Scott Burrell thing was the weirdest part to me. He never did anything, like, really after the, they did that one little kind of segment about it, but then there's just nothing after that, right? Like,
yeah, I think Scott Burrell was one of the guys that Jordan pushed and then never really got that much better. And so it's kind of like coaching, right? Like, you're hard on the players that you think have potential. And if you're a player and your coach kind of all of a sudden stops coaching you and you're not getting that much better, it's probably because they've given up on you. So I feel like if Jordan's riding you, it's because he thinks you can be really good and help them. And then once you prove to him that you can or you can't, like, he makes his decision. Like, yeah, don't feed Horace Grant. He had a bad game. That, I mean, it's a weird way to say it. That's just Jordan saying, like, I know you can play better than that. You don't get dinner, which was obviously a joke. He's not going to go back there and snatch it away from him. Like, I just don't know what.
I don't know what Horace was after.
I don't either. I still can't figure it out.
I mean, it's Michael Jordan's documentary. He's going to come off.
And he's Michael Jordan.
I thought Davey said fat shaming was okay. So why are we all upset about him not being allowed to eat dinner?
Fat shaming is okay now. It wasn't until a couple of days ago.
I got you.
I don't think he didn't say it was because he's fat. He just said it's like a treat to a dog. Like, nope, you don't get a treat because you weren't a good dog.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, you didn't play well.
It's like sending the kids to bed without dinner, which now would probably be classified as child abuse.
You go to jail.
But back in the day, that was just like normal. You misbehave, no dinner. Go to bed. You ever tried to sleep on an empty stomach? That's rough.
Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah.
Would not recommend it.
I mean, would you call Michael Jordan a bully? Is Horace Grant just, like, new woke? Is he just, like, is that the problem here? Like, he's saying, oh, what he did to Scott Burrell, that was just way over the line.
I mean, he didn't really keep Scott Burrell from eating.
No, I know, but I feel like that's, I don't know. I feel like we're in this.
I think this is Horace Grant realizing that people are asking him questions about the documentary. He still holds a little bit of a grudge against Michael.
Who holds a grudge against him.
Yeah, so now he gets to tell his side of the story, but it just comes off as petty. Mm. Sorry.
Yep. No, I agree. We'll kick off hour three. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out.